Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Nerds and geeks, hold on to your seats because it's about to go down. Welcome to Nerdorama, the voice of the Nerd Nation. I'm Mo Kelly, he's Tawala Sharp, and together we bring you your daily dose of nerd news, analysis, and conversations with the best and brightest of the nerdverse.
Tawala Sharp, I have to make sure that I read this correctly. I want to make sure I read this correctly. No, I'm not talking about WandaVision, episode 6. That was great. I enjoyed that. No, I'm not talking about Black Widow, the movie, the Marvel movie, Scarlett Johansson. It's supposed to still be reserved for theaters only. Not talking about that. We could talk about that. In fact, we will talk about that, but that's not what I'm referring to right now. Did I read, as in like Nicolas Cage and John Travolta? Nicolas Cage, John Travolta, okay?
Yes.
Face Off, that movie.
Yes.
It's supposed to have a sequel and it's in the works.
Yes, it is a sequel in the works from the director of Godzilla versus King Kong, Adam Wingard. It's, you know, Variety is reporting on it that, you know, he would love the film growing up and wants to bring it back to, I guess, audiences who have never seen it. But here's the thing. It doesn't include neither Nicolas Cage or
John Travolta.
Travolta, yeah.
Yeah, look, I really did like that movie, okay?
It was a great
movie. But it was
movie.
Really preposterous, the whole look, idea.
Take the face off.
off. Castor Troy. All right, think about this. If I were to trade faces with, I don't know, I need to use a brother for this, what I'm getting ready to say, like Juwan, okay? And let's say we traded faces. As far as facially is concerned, we're identical. I'm quite sure my wife would recognize that Juwan and I are not, the bodies haven't been exchanged, okay? For better or for worse. How do we want to come out on that?
Look, in the movie, we were supposed to assume that physically they were at least the same height and build. That's what we were supposed to assume, even though.
Did they have the same chest hair, Tawala?
Some lovemaking happening.
Yes, they did. We've been living together for the past 3 months as man and wife. And you didn't notice anything different down there, for better or worse.
Yeah.
You didn't notice anything different.
Look, you have to suspend every ounce of belief when you go into a film where a criminally insane psychopath is trading faces with, you know, the FBI investigator who's been chasing him.
There's got to be an easier way. There's got to be an easier way. If my job came to me, okay, yes. Robin Bertolucci is my boss, okay? Robin Bertolucci, on behalf of iHeart, comes to me and says, Mo, we need you to consider taking your face off.
Off. Yes.
I would respectfully tell her hell to the no. Okay, it's just not enough money. No, Mo, we can reverse it. It'll be fine. We have the technology. We can do it.
Look, the very fact that you cannot look at these things once you're in the movie. Once you're watching the movie, you have to take everything as being realistic. We cannot sit and watch Jurassic Park and say that couldn't happen. Like, come on, we're watching a movie about dinosaurs. Anything can happen.
But you set up the rules within the movie, and I always want a movie to follow its own rules. If they had just stayed in the public or just stayed at work, I think that would have worked better for me. But I'm quite sure, you know, especially when you're talking about going home and living as someone's husband, there's just too many, you know, face or not.
Look, there's not that much acting in the world.
No.
Because they didn't change voices. It wasn't voice off. It was just the faces off.
No, they did something with their voices. They did something. I can't remember.
How did they make a sequel with it? Because of the way, and I'm not going to get any spoilers to somebody that didn't watch the movie in 1996 when it came out, but
give away spoilers. We are.
But how can they make, just, I remember the way that movie ends. How do you make a sequel?
Again,
technology's improved. I don't know.
Because one of them did die. Yes. How do
one of them did die? Actually, and the little brother also died. So,
yes.
You know, everyone's maybe, dead. Oh, the son grew up. The son grew up and figured out that John Archer is not his biological father. Ooh. He's actually the son of Caster Troy, and he's mad.
She's going to put his face on.
Yes. Off. He's going to take his father's face, and they're going to switch.
Maybe there's a lot of face trading going on. Maybe it's, you know, it's like the Agent Smiths, how there's more of them in the sequel to The Matrix, and maybe everyone's trading faces in this next one.
Wait a minute. So maybe it's like a whole black market of face switching.
So it's like with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, but it's going to be trading faces. That was funny. Give me my damn credit. That was funny. That was on the fly. That was extemporaneous. But anyhow, yeah, this is the problem. Here's the real point. This is the problem with sequels. The only way that sequel works is if you liked it, or let me say, if you've even seen and liked the original. Because unless both are true, you've seen the original and you liked it, the idea of a sequel means absolutely nothing. But if you saw and liked the original, you're going to run into these same brick walls that we're having right now. It's like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, yes, they have face transplant surgery today, so it's not a tremendous leap in a scientific sense. But to wrap another story around it where some FBI agent needs to, there's just no other way that he can catch this criminal unless he offers up his face. Oh, but it'll be okay. We can reverse the procedure. Wink, wink. Yeah, we all know that nothing was going to go wrong last time. So who's going to be the fool who does it again? Again! Okay, Tawala. Tell me about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. What's that about?
Yeah, look, I love it. The Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur is a great Marvel comic book about a little girl who has a genius level intellect. She is quite possibly the only person in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe who's smarter than Reed Richards, leader of the Fantastic Four, right? She comes across Devil Dinosaur, who is, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's a big giant red dinosaur. They have this symbiotic relationship. And after that, you know, things go crazy. She's living in New York with a giant red dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And this is a series that, within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for me, this is what really blew my mind about it, is the addition of Lawrence Fishburne as a character known as the Beyonder. Okay, if anyone knows who about Spider-Man and his black symbiotic uniform, which ultimately became Venom or whatever, then they know that he got that suit because the Beyonder snatched him and a whole bunch of heroes and a whole bunch of villains and put them on a planet and had them like battle to the death.
Is this live action?
It's exciting just because of the Beyonder's inclusion in this.
Is this live action and going to be a part of the Disney Plus app?
Now, here's the thing. It's an animated series. It is on the Disney Plus app, but the fact that they are still connecting this to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is not a show that exists outside of the MCU, which is another mind-blowing addition.
It, in the way that I think they're moving in the direction of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse could very well connect to the Tom Holland Spider-Man. Yes?
Yes. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. That is why this is a major announcement for me. Like, when I saw this, a lot of people saw this and were like, who in the hell is Moon Girl? And Devil Dinosaur, like who? What?
I'm like Electro Woman and Dyna Girl. Do you remember that?
No.
You don't remember Electro Woman and Dyna Girl?
I do.
Electro Woman and Dyna Girl. Deidre Hall.
Because that was outfit. Corny as no? hell.
Sid and Marty Krofft, All Stars. Don't you blaspheme Deidre Hall?
Just that show.
Next, you'll say that you're not a Days of Our Lives fan.
I like so many of the other shows.
Dr. Shrinker. He's a man with the evil mind. Oh, real quick. Speaking of reboots, did you really put a story in front of me that they're remaking or rebooting Mr. and Mrs. Smith but it's not going to be with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. It's going to be Donald Glover and Phoebe Waller-Bridge. What? Yeah. And it's going to be a TV series?
Yeah, a series.
Oh,
a series on Amazon. It's happening.
I'm still not watching.
But it could be good. Look, Donald Glover, he does great work.
Fine actor.
Loved him as Lando.
Fine actor. I know.
Both seasons of Atlanta were phenomenal.
Fine actor. I'm not watching.
He's kind of got, you know, at least my vote of confidence. Mm-hmm. And this is a stretch.
Yes, it is a stretch. We haven't seen him do this. It is that.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the BiPod, the only online comic book review column that wants you to Wang Chung tonight. My name is Hannibal Taboo, and you can find everything you'd like to know about me using @HANNI, B as in bounce, AL, T as in tough, A, B as in bounce, U. That's also HannibalTaboo.com, and you'll find that, you know, on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Facebook, MySpace, Friendster, Black Planet, Plurk, and, you know, probably the back of your mom's social security card, as well as everywhere that you want to be. These reviews are for books that came out February 10th, 2021. There are four sections to the BiPow. The first is called the titular BiPow, for books that are so good they demand to be purchased in the moment, or books from a series that have been consistently good so long that they'll keep the spot until there's three not-so-great books in a row. Shall we begin? Swell. Let's start out with Commanders in Crisis number 5 from Image Comics with the creative team of Steve Orlando, David Tinto. There's a lot of people on this one, hang tight. Francesco Caratenuto, Chiara De Francia, Nicolo Laparini, Manuel Apupo, and Fabio Amelia. Many of us have become acquainted with the idea of turning the volume up to 11, whereas most things have 10 increments from silence to maximum volume, and something intense goes past those limitations. This wildly, boldly ambitious issue finds the very idea of numbers to be too pedestrian as it literally hurls chunks of brilliance at you the size of a nation state with no signs of relenting. Without spoiling anything, there are a number of amazing concepts here that, by themselves, could almost support entire years' worth of stories in other books. For example, at one point we are introduced to the Hindsight, H-I-N-D-S-I-T-E, a prison that, quote, lags inmates one day in the past, we watch them here in the present. Hard to escape when any attempt for them already happened for us. Without getting into the poisonous reality of criminal justice in a carceral state, from a purely comic book hero standpoint, that's freaking amazing. And that was just a throwaway section that doesn't change the plot knowing it ahead of time. Who comes up with something like that, let alone offhandedly? The answer, of course, is Steve Orlando, who is writing this book like he has mere moments before it's the end of the line and he's not leaving anything in the tank. This book has so many ideas that will make you stop, sit back, and go, whoa. That's frankly unfair to your average book. There are very, very few comics that come this hard at you. All-Star Superman, or Vision, or truth be told, Blood Syndicate. But those have practically elevated themselves into myth. Let's stop for a second to talk about what we're seeing on the panels. There's some not-safe-for-work stuff in these pages, but done so, again, in the interest of presenting, literally, new ways of looking at things. A laptop screen or the closeness between intimates is pictured as fascinatingly as smashing through a ceiling or a grandiose reveal. David Tinto, Francesco Caratenuto, Chiara De Francia, Nicolo Laparini, Manuela Pupo, there was some extra coloring help this issue, that's why I have so many names, and Fabio Amelia ran the table with this bombastic, bigger-than-life story. The only possible criticism is that, like when Willy Wonka's Riverboat got going, the classic, not that Johnny Depp weirdness, could this be out of control? Could this be too much goodness and it's ready to spin out? This creative team hasn't led us astray yet, but if that's your biggest concern, you're doing all right. That rating is buy. Next up is a big surprise, which shouldn't be once I saw who wrote it, but whatever. King in Black, Black Panther number one from Marvel Comics with the creative team of Jeffrey Thorne, German Peralta, Jesus Aburtov, and Joe Sabino. For a few weeks, issue after issue has come out showing the heroes of the Marvel Universe falling one by one to the deathly dull threat of Null, god of symbiotes, the void, and unidimensional character motivations. This issue shows what happens when he sends his apparently endless forces towards Wakanda, and Black Panther does his best impersonation of Gritty. The script by Jeffrey Thorne here truly set this apart. Whereas King in Black, Marauders number one, sidestepped the central conflict of the crossover for a monstrous tale of humor proportions, this issue says, knuckle up, and dives headfirst into the fighting the threat that's menacing the planet. The visual work provided by German Peralta, Jesus Aburtov, and Joe Sabino is both faithful to Wakanda's roots all the way back to Jack and Stan, while incorporating the design flair of Brian Stelfreeze and the canonical contributions of Christopher Priest and Reginald Hudlund. This issue is literally a King Solomon Frog away from having everything in the kitchen sink, all woven in with great craft and invention. There are a few really wonderful moments that should be discussed as best as possible without spoilers. A comms conversation between Okoye and T'Challa revealed a very big Wakanda secret that's been hiding in the background. A segment at the end of the issue that is gasp-inducing, framed by a flashback narration, showcases the character of the Panther and the nation, and that's really something to see. The dramatic tension here is wielded like a rapier, and this issue fulfills its promise in a very successful fashion. In a word, wow. When crossovers were all beginning to do the same thing, this one showed a very nice take on how a tie-in can have effect and impact the story. That rating would be buy. I'm shocked to tell you, let's go to Future State Green Lantern number 2 from DC Comics with a creative team of, again, Jeffrey Thorne, also with Tom Raimi, Josie Campbell, Andy Tong, Robert Venditti, Dexter Soy, Micah T.A., Ann World Design, Will Quintana, Dave Sharp, Alex Sinclair, and Steve Wands. Yes, that's a lot of people. There's a lot of story here. Buckle up. With an incredibly strong lead story, this continues a look at what happens to Green Lanterns when the source of their powers, the very light they shine on the galaxy, goes dark. From a brutal war story to an intimate tale of people lost in the dark to whatever happened to Hal Jordan, you'll find people determined to bring justice to environments that more than likely might resist it despite their intense need for it. Starting off with the story of John Stewart, he starts off in a bad place, frankly. A horde of bloodthirsty coons zealously worshiping the god in red have captured him after he sacrificed himself to make sure helpless refugees could escape. The leader of this Kundish cult wears the robotic body of a fallen Green Lantern as armor, exhorting his followers to greater atrocities and mayhem. With super hard skin, greater than standard strength, and relentless focus, the coons seem virtually unbeatable. This, however, is not their story. Jeff Thorne's script is clever, drawing you in with the growing sense of doom until two things happen that are so well thought out and so well established by material in the work that's really rather remarkable. Tom Raimi, Micah T.A., and Ann World Design make every gut-crushing tragedy and surprise leap off the panel. The second story, written by Josie Campbell, shows the fate of 11-year-old Kelly Kintella, ironically called Teen Lantern, because see, she's not a teenager, wielding a gauntlet connected to the central power battery. The Guardians dispatch Mogo to lead the tiny heroine to one of their best investigators, Far Sector's Joe Mulan, because it required a trip through, quote, the Boots Void, a sector devoid of stars and galaxies, lightless in most respects. Then, as noted, and I cannot emphasize this enough, the lights go out. And anyone who has jumped at a bump in the night knows that, as George R.R. Martin wrote, the night is dark and full of terrors. Mogo and Teen Lantern try to figure that out, and it's no easy win. This Josie Campbell script is a little inconclusive, but the artwork from Andy Tong, Will Quintana, and Dave Sharp well captures the oppressive environment of lightlessness and threat. Finally, Hal Jordan gets a jump start on his ring and heads off to find out what happened, and it ain't good. as he journeys across the expanse of space to see how it has fallen into chaos without the Green Lanterns on hand to dispense at least their idea of justice. He faces an unpleasant confrontation when he finally reaches Oa. Robert Venditti showcases this laundry list of hotspots around the galaxy, and Dexter Soy, Alex Sinclair, and Steve Wands again make this man-against-the-odds environment work fairly well. All around, of all of the future state looks, this shows the Green Lanterns in, pardon the phrase, the best light, making a way in the darkness that they did not cause and trying to hold a line against, as perhaps Perpetua believed, worlds tilted towards doom. That rating there would be bye. Would you believe we're not done? Hang on. Taskmaster number 3 from Marvel Comics with a creative team of Jed McKay, Alessandro Vitti, Guru EFX, and Joe Caramagna. The world of clandestine operations may seem an odd place for a guy in an orange, white, and blue costume with a cape and a skull mask. This issue shows how the title character not only manages, but thrives in a world of everyday people making undercover deals, dropping him into South Korea and shining a spotlight on a rarely seen but super interesting area of the Marvel Universe. Taskmaster's on a mission. To exonerate himself for a murder he didn't commit, he has to use his photographic reflexes to copy the gait and demeanor of 3 of the world's most dangerous operatives. After nearly getting killed getting a look at Phil Coulson, he has to get close to Ami Han, director of a South Korean agency that's part CIA and part Avengers. Jed McKay's script delivers with humor, Marvel-specific technology, fantastic action scenes, and pitch-perfect pacing. Likewise, the artwork of Alessandro Vitti, Guru EFX, and Joe Caramagna all do some great things. Taskmaster hitching a ride is brilliantly depicted. A hallway fight is gripping, and even an HVAC system becomes a trap fraught with peril. The ticking clock element of this book is also great, with Natasha Romanoff rolling up like an inexorable T-800, all focus and determination and providing a great character interaction that had fantastic tension. This book is succeeding in making Taskmaster a super engaging presence, kind of a NoHo Hank meets Christopher Chance from the Human Target TV series. That's an all-new lane that learns a lot of lessons from the cinematic universe while losing nothing that makes comics great. So that rating would be bye. Wow. We're seriously not done. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true. Next up we have Scout's Honor number 2 from Aftershock Comics with the creative team of David Pepose, Luca Casalanguida, Matt Miller, and Carlos M. Mangual. With a post-apocalyptic setting and a looming sense of urgency like vultures circling overhead, the latest brainchild of writer David Pepose raises the stakes for Kit, a red-haired teenage member of the Ranger Scouts. Patterned after a discovered guidebook for survivalists, this male-only organization acts as a brand of frontier justice, working to impose some kind of civilization on a lawless land. Unfortunately, the events of the last issue show a stormy center for this silver cloud. Given that Kit is Mulaning it as masquerade, that just ratchets the tension up even higher. There are 4 big emotional beats in this issue that make it really stand up. Spoiling them would be poor form, but suffice it to say that Kit's new understanding of the origins of the Ranger Scouts gives him dire misgivings about how to manage the brutal circumstances. Speaking of brutal, there's a kind of poetry to the visuals presented by Luca Casalanguida, Matt Miller, and Carlos M. Mangual. An early panel shows an arc of blood from a ritual combat making a crescent over the meaningful captions underneath. That panel could have gone a lot of ways, but it chose to find the artistry in violence, and that's indicative of a lot of what happens here. When an arrow flies, or a punch is swung, or even a twig is snapped underfoot, it presents an immediacy that gives these still images much more motion than one would expect. Likewise, the framing of the last panel, with the silhouetted faces and the clear lines of the uniform of office, those choices are very effective. When push, as it inevitably does, comes to shove, the choices made here frame characters with determination and struggle, not icons, but truly fleshed out characters trying to figure it out when literally the whole world seems poised against them. So that rating would be bye. Holy crap, that's a lot of great comics. Next up, we have a section called Honorable Mention. It's for books that were good, but maybe not quite good enough to get your actual money into their actual pockets and out of yours. There's nothing on the Honorable Mentions pile this week. Everything either showed up or, well, we'll get to that in a minute. Next, we have a section called Meh, the Meh pile, which is for books that the good and the bad of itself just kind of washed each other out in a gray pastiche of ennui and indifference. There were a lot of books. Black Hammer Visions number 1, Critical Role, Vox Machina Origins, Volume 3, Number 1, came close, but still a meh. There was also DC's Love of the Battlefield, Number 1, Future State Dark Detective, Number 3, Future State Justice League, Number 2, Future State Kara Zor-El, Superwoman, Number 2. That was almost bad, but it was just dull. Future State Robin Eternal, Number 2, Future State Superman Wonder Woman, Number 2, Rorschach, Number 5. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, number 278. Star Trek Voyager, Seven's Reckoning, number 4. Birthrate, 46. Bliss, number 5. Meh, 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 all down the line. Amazing Spider-Man, number 59. Daredevil, number 27. Eternals, number 2, which was like, what? But still meh. Excalibur, number 18. Fantastic Four, number 29. King of Black's Thunderbolts. Morbius, Bond of Blood. I mean, you know, people tried. I mean, X-Force number 17 tried with Quentin, but, you know, mostly, there was a lot of meh stuff this week, including, sadly, Star Wars Darth Vader number 10, which was coming along, but these heavy-handed dream sequences to bring in stuff from the trilogies, ugh. Anywho, so yeah, that's the meh pile, and those books were not mostly good enough to even bother talking very much about. So, our last section, rather, we have here is called No, Just No. And it's for books that are abjectly terrible and should not be purchased under any circumstances. And I'm very happy to tell you there's nothing there. With, what, am I wrong? This is five? Yeah, with five amazing purchases, this is one of the best weeks of comics in recent memory. So definitely, definitely grab you some books this week because, ooh, googly moogly, things are great out there. However, do it carefully because, as you know, even with the vaccine, things are not great out there. Please wear your masks, too, if you can. Please be safe. Thank you to Mo and Twala for having me here. I'll see you next time.
Hey guys, Mo Kelly here. The new Daily Nerdorama podcast is featured on iHeartRadio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast feed to get your daily dose of nerd news. Also available on iTunes, Spreaker, and all the top podcasting apps. It's free and perfect for everyone in your nerd family.
Nerdorama is produced by Tuala Sharp and continues to be a segment on The Mo Kelly Show. Weekends on KFI Los Angeles. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Nerdorama News.
Until next time, keep it comic.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.